Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Really happy to have you along today as we visit with Lindsay Hendricks. She is Assistant Director of Horticulture for the Green Bay Botanical Garden, and she's going to be answering your questions about preparing your garden for winter. We'll also take a look at what to expect at the Green Bay Botanical Garden in the coming months. And again, she'll be answering your gardening questions. I'm sure we can talk about indoor plants as well. Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email at ideas@wpr.org or post your questions on our Facebook page. And if you've got some photos, we'd love to see those as well. Lindsay Hendricks, welcome.
Hello, Larry. Thanks for having me on again.
It's great to have you with us. Lindsay, by the way, is at our Green Bay studio, so it's great to have her there, and certainly great to have you listening in. And again, questions, call us at 800-642-1234. I really enjoy the Green Bay Botanical Garden, but for those who haven't been, tell us about the gardens.
Well, the Botanical Gardens is 47 acres, kind of in conjunction with NWTC. We lease the land from them for $1 a year. So they get to use the gardens as kind of a living classroom for their horticulture program. And of that 47 acres, about half of that is developed. And we actually just finished our grand garden, our new expansion to the backyard of the garden this year. So if you haven't been out this summer, you're definitely going to want to come out next year and check it out. We have a lot of really great plantings in now.
Yeah, you really do. And I mean, there are things that people can see at the gardens right now. What can someone expect to see at the botanical gardens if they visit right now?
Well, right now we're actually starting to set up for our Garden of Lights display, which starts in November. So there are quite a few light frames and structures up right now. But we do still have a little bit of fall color left. We're kind of coming to the tail end of that. So we're also starting to cut back some of our perennials and pulling our annuals because we have had quite a few killing frosts right now. So we kind of pull all the dead, yucky stuff out so when people come through, you know, they don't see all that. But a lot of our trees and shrubs are still up with a little bit of fall color left. So if you just like walking through the woods and some of our more natural areas, there's definitely still quite a bit to see. So it's definitely not the summer garden everyone's used to, but the change of the seasons is always kind of nice.
Yeah, I think it's nice just to wander through. True, even at this time of the year. It's fun. The temperatures are a little sharper, and I don't know. It's just a good time to be out there.
Yeah, it can be very refreshing on those days. It's a little brisk, but when the sun's out, you know, it's beautiful. So it's definitely, you know, we're not done for the year. There's definitely stuff that you can still come out and see.
Well, for sure. And lots of callers online with questions. I have plenty of questions about the gardens myself, but let's go to Dave in Beloit, who has a question for you. Dave, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. I have a couple of hydrangeas in the yard, and one that I haven't planted yet is still in the pot from the store. The two that failed in the yard were disappointing. One's growing well. The other that I thought had failed did start to come back this summer. So I'm wondering how to care for them that are planted, and should I get the third one in the ground and do something special with that? And how would I prepare the ground that's most friendly to those?
Yeah, and you're in Beloit, so you're in kind of southern Wisconsin, so
yeah.
A little warmer than Green Bay. What do you think, yes. Lindsay?
Okay, Dave. Well, I think, do you know what kind of hydrangeas you have? Are they the paniculatas that have the really woody stems, or are they the herbaceous ones like the Annabelles?
That I don't know. They come from a local home store, and they could be pink or blue, depending on how the soil is.
Okay.
Those that helps.
Yeah. Sound like that actually does help, because usually the pink and blues tend to be around the macrophylla family, which those tend to be a little bit tricky. So since you're a little bit more in southern Wisconsin, if you hurry up and get that little guy in the ground and make sure he's watered in really well before the ground freezes, you might have a pretty good chance of overwintering him. Otherwise, if you don't have time to plant it, you can actually sink the pot that it's already in into the soil, because that way the roots will be, you know, in the ground kind of like it's planted. And then when the ground freezes, you know, it's not going to die necessarily. It'll just go dormant. So with those macrophyllas, the Forever and Ever series is a really popular one with the red and the pink blooms. Those tend to be somewhat hardy. I know up in Green Bay we have problems getting those growing and blooming really well. So depending on the cultivar you have, I know some of the newer cultivars in that series are a little bit more hardy. But I know hydrangeas tend to like more sun to part shade, part sun conditions. So if you have it in the middle of your yard where it's getting full sun in the summer and it gets really dry, they tend to not do so well. So if you can put them in a location that gets a little bit more shade, and I know they tend to like having a little bit more moist soil, you know, keeping it watered and putting it in a spot where it's not going to dry out in the middle of the summer might help you. With your hydrangeas, and something you can do to maybe help it overwinter this year, especially if you don't get it in the ground, or even if you do, is to put a little bit of mulch around the base of the plant, because that will help overwinter. And if you get a really cold, cold snap this winter, that'll kind of protect the crown of the plant, and then it will be more likely to come back next spring and have more blooms and more growth.
There we go. Good luck, Dave.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to Tom in Menominee Falls next. Hi, Tom.
How you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, thanks for taking the call. My garden's done for the year, basically. And I heard sometime that you shouldn't till it, but I was a little surprised at that. I was going to till it up and put a lot of milorganite on it.
So you're talking about your vegetable garden, Tom?
That's correct.
Okay, so have you cleaned off the sort of the dead tomato plants and all that sort of thing from the garden?
I have.
All right, Lindsay, what do you think?
Yeah, so your question is if you should till up your garden or just let it be, correct?
Correct.
Okay, that kind of depends on your philosophy and I guess your preference. I know there's a lot of gardeners out there that at the end of the year they pull all their vegetables out, and they'll throw some new compost in. Some people even use leaves or milorganite. And then, you know, they till their gardens for the fall, let it go to sleep. And then next spring, you know, it's pretty much ready to go. Which that's a great thing to do if you want, but I know there are some people out there who kind of like to go more along the lines of the no-till practice, and that's kind of myself included. And the reason some people do that is because continually tilling your soil, it's nice and loose and fluffy for planting all your plants and starting your seeds, but sometimes what that does is that actually over time can destroy the soil structure a little bit. And if you have a lot of earthworms and good decomposing bugs in your garden, that can kind of kill off some of those beneficial insects. But that's not to say that tilling your garden is bad. It's just kind of more what your preference is in terms of kind of maintaining the flora and fauna that live in your soil versus, you know, tilling everything up and having the nice fluffy soil. So I guess you could probably go either way. I know a lot of people do till it because it tends to keep the weeds down and you have that nice tilty soil. But if you kind of go the no-till way, what I do is I'll just leave my garden, let it go to bed for the winter. And then in the spring, when you get ready to start planting again, I go out and make sure I weed everything, and I'll actually take a garden hoe in the areas that I'm going to be planting my rows. I'll kind of work those areas up a little bit more, and then, you know, I plant my seeds and everything starts growing. And what I'll do in between my rows, instead of tilling, is I'll actually lay down some leaf mulch, or I think I don't know the name for it is. I forget. I can't think of it right now, but leaf mold, I think, is what it's called. You can get the bales of the leaves from your local waste disposal site, and you kind of layer those in between the paths, and that keeps the weeds down, and you kind of walk on that. And then, that kind of adds organic matter into your soil. And every couple years, I will till it up just to kind of redistribute all the organic matter. But that's, I guess, kind of a personal preference to you, whether you want to till it or not.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Tom. You. Ken in Manitowoc, it's your turn. Hi, Ken.
Hi. I have questions as to, I'm having some difficulty getting to my plants. I have a lot of perennials I bought this year, some rose bushes. I don't know if I can get to it. First, I want to know how late can we plant, put them in the ground.
All right. Do you know, what perennials do you have that you want to put in the ground?
Most of them are like black-eyed Susans and some coneflowers and Sylvia, that type of thing. Those kind of ones that flower and come back every year, and then they grow to add more to the plant.
Yeah.
And then some rose bushes.
Okay.
And also butterfly bushes also.
Okay, well, great question. Since, the ground hasn't frozen yet, at least not in Green Bay, and I'm sure...
No, it hasn't here either.
Okay. Like Dave, who called earlier and asked about planting hydrangeas, is it too late? You know, as long as your ground isn't frozen yet, you'll probably be okay planting them in, but I would do it sooner rather than later, because the later you wait in the fall to plant... sometimes the roots don't get a really good chance to establish before the winter, and if you don't have them watered well before they go in the ground and you get a really fast cold snap and the ground freezes all of a sudden, sometimes that can shock those perennials and they don't overwinter as well. So I would get them in the ground as soon as possible. Make sure you get them a nice long soak to get all their soil and roots all set and get all the air pockets out of there, and that'll help them overwinter. And then as far as your rose bushes, those are fun because depending if you have a hybrid tea rose or a landscape rose, the hybrid teas, grandifloras, floribundas, you know, they're really pretty, but they're really kind of finicky. And in Green Bay at the Botanical Garden, we actually mulch all those roses with about 2 to 3 feet of wood chip mulch every year.
Yeah.
And that helps protect the crowns to let them overwinter better. And then in the spring, you take the mulch off and prune them back to live growth. So if it's one of those fancy roses, you're definitely going to want to mulch it. But if it's a landscape shrub rose, you know, you can plant that in the ground, give it some water. Those will probably be okay to overwinter without any extra mulch or extra attention that they need. So
would I be okay to put the pots in the ground and put the ground up and around and put some mulch on top if I can't actually get them planted out of the pot? Would I be safe to do that?
Yep, that's another great idea. At the garden, we even have a little storage area of stuff that gets pulled out of the ground, and we don't have a spot for it. So if you heel your pots into the soil, make sure, you know, the soil level outside of the pot is the same height as what's in the pot. And then, yes, you can definitely throw some mulch on top of, you know, all those perennials to kind of help correct the crown for the winter. Just make sure you give them a nice good drink before you put them to sleep, because that'll help them overwinter. But, yeah, definitely another option if you don't have time to get them in the ground.
Good. I just wanted reassurance.
Yes, you'll be good.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. or post a photo, garden photo, or question on our Facebook page. Love to see those as well. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on Garden Talk. Next week on Garden Talk, UW Extension horticulturist Scott Royce will be back to talk about gardening and answer your flower and plant and all kinds of gardening questions. Join us at 11 on Friday, 7 a.m. on Saturday, or online anytime. Right now, visiting with Lindsay Hendricks, Assistant Director of Horticulture at the Green Bay Botanical Garden. Great to have her along. And I think there's one open line left for you at 800-642-1234. Give a call with your gardening question. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Joanne emailed to ask if it's too late to put down weed and feed fertilizer on her lawn. And we used to recommend it about this time of the year, but I think that recommendation has gone away, hasn't it, Lindsay?
Actually, lawn is not my forte. Facilities manager Dave at the garden, he does a lot of the lawn applications, but I did actually look that up a little bit before I came because I figured we'd get a question about lawn fertilizing, and there seems to be a lot of back and forth. Some people say, you know, people are doing way too much fertilizing because, you know, a lot of the fertilizing companies and lawn services, you know, they're selling a product, so you want you to do more, 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 more. And then you have the other extreme that says, you know, fertilizer's bad for the environment and all that fun stuff. But kind of from what I looked at this morning, it seems to be as long as you're not fertilizing, you know, every month, doing a late fall application of a fertilizer that's a little bit higher in... I think it's phosphorus or potassium, actually helps put your lawn to bed for the year and promotes root growth, and that can help lead to greener lawn the next spring and help protect the grass from succumbing to, you know, late winter, early spring diseases. So I think it depends what camp you're in. If, you know, you really like to fertilize your lawn and keep those weeds down and have the nice lush green lawn, but I know there's a lot of people out there that they're okay with the weeds and not doing all the extra work and all the extra chemicals into the environment. So
yeah.
I guess it depends on, you know, if you want to be the really nice green lawn all year, if you're okay with a couple weeds and, you know, those dandelions that grow, they look kind of hideous at times when they're all fluffy, but, you know, they're one of the earlier weeds that flower that bees and some of those pollinators can really get at before a lot of the flowers, you know, bloom in the garden. So
Creeping Charlie, too.
Yeah, yeah, it's another good one.
Oh, and it flowers. It's one of the early flowering plants, so it does provide some good. But I have seen some research that the Halloween fertilizing schedule, people are not recommending that. Our lawn care people at UW are not recommending it now because they say it you're wasting a lot of material, essentially.
Okay, well, that's good to know. I'm always, you know, up for all the latest and greatest on all those researches and stuff. So
there we go. Philip in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Philip.
Yes, how you doing today?
Great, appreciate the call.
The reason I'm calling is, actually, if you look on your Facebook page, you will see that I've posted pictures of my tuberous begonias. And the problem I've had is my mom got me into these things about 30 years ago, and everybody says you can carry the bulbs over every year. I have never once gotten the bulbs to carry over. My plants this year that I got are absolutely gorgeous, and I want to try to carry them over to next year. How can I do it? I've tried putting them in paper bags. I've tried putting them in the little white bead things. I forget what it's called now, sort of like a perlite. Every different thing I've heard, I have tried and can never get them to carry over.
Well, we actually do a lot of overwintering of bulbs at the Green Bay Botanical Garden. I don't have necessarily a science, I guess, to it, but I kind of just do what works for me. Quick question, are your begonias in containers right now, or were they in the ground? And
no, they're in containers because they're tuberous, so they bloom down, and so I have them hanging up off the ground about 4 or 5 feet because they'll droop down that far.
Okay. So one year we did overwinter some tuberous begonias, and the way we did it is they were planted in the ground as an annual display, so we pulled them out, and we washed off all the tubers, and we set them in... a cat litter bucket. It sounds funny, but, you know, a lot of gardeners have cats, so they have all these cat litter pails laying around that they tend to use a lot. So we had a pail that had a lid on it, and we put them inside this pail with a little bit of sphagnum moss to kind of collect the extra moisture and kind of regulate the humidity in there. And we kept that bucket out in our shop, which is, it's not fully heated, but it never gets below freezing out there. And then in the next spring, it was about March or April, we took them out and planted them in little pots in our hoop house and started them up again. So that seemed to work for us that winter. But what I do with a lot of my bulbs that come out of the cottage garden that aren't hardy for our winters is I just leave them right in the pot, and I will put them in our shop, and I just let them go dormant for the winter. They kind of just go to bed. So you stop watering them, they drop a lot of their leaves, and they just kind of go into hibernation mode. And then kind of check on them, you know, once a month. Usually I go out there if the soil's really dry, I'll give it a little bit of water, but you don't want them to start growing again. And then about March or April, I bring them into the light again and then, you know, kind of cut back any stuff that has dried off or kind of got dead and crispy and then start watering again. And then within a couple weeks or months, depending on, you know, the conditions in your house, they should start growing back a little bit. So my best way to overwinter stuff is I like to just keep it in the pot because that soil that's in there kind of acts as a buffer from the dry, cold winter air and, you know, the tubers that you want to stay nice and hydrated. So I would try maybe one of those options if you haven't tried those yet. They seem to work well for us at the garden, and it's pretty easy just leaving them in your pot and let them go to sleep for winter.
I will try that. I got nothing to lose. Nothing else to work so far.
Absolutely,
Philip.
<Hopefully it works.
laughs>
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Let's go to Bob in Oshkosh next. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an asparagus question for you. I have a wild bed of asparagus. Well, what I would call wild, it's coming up to the grass.
Okay.
And we let it grow, you know. And this year, we harvest some, and then I kind of cut around it, and I let it go to seed. And then it seemed like it just kept going to seed. It kept growing and growing and growing. And I just mowed it down here a couple weeks ago, all right?
Okay.
I was wondering what I could do to help that bed sustain itself more. Can I plant some more? Do I do that in the fall? Do I do that in the spring? Do I work up around it? What do I do exactly? Because it comes up randomly, probably in a quarter acre.
In a quarter acre. Oh, my goodness.
It's substantial. Is there anything I could do to help this bed?
You can hire some help to keep it weeded for you. That's a lot of area.
Well, you know, I figured if I just let it go to seed and it seeded itself out, I would retain some more plants. But I didn't do anything with the soil. You know, it's coming up through the grass. I never seen anything quite like it. But
yeah, I have. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not sure what you can do. I mean, you can try to get rid of the grass and so forth that's in between, but that would be a lot of work if you ask me. I'd be more inclined to, you know, start my own bed.
Well, there's a substantial amount there, you know, and
yeah.
It's just, I just wanted to help it. You know, I don't know if I could fertilize it. I just never saw anything quite like it, and we talked about it, and we thought, well, if we just let it go to seed, but like I say, I had green seeds at the end of August.
Oh.
Yeah.
And they're real little, you know?
My suggestion, I mean, you definitely don't want to spray anything in there to kill off your grass because that's going to affect your asparagus. But what you can maybe try, well, I guess if this grass is already established, applying like a pre-emergent fertilizer with a little bit of weed killer in there won't really help. But probably what would help the most is, you know, to get that grass out of there. So, I mean, I know it's kind of tedious, and maybe you can enlist some family members or friends to kind of do like a grass pull and give them some, you know, asparagus as a reward once it starts coming up. But, you know, you can add some compost and organic matter to the beds that'll make the soil a little bit healthier for your asparagus. And, you know, it should get better, you know, more prolific. And I don't really have a lot of experience growing asparagus, unfortunately. But I know the best time to plant it is in spring. You get like the little bare roots and then you put it in the ground and you have to put them in these trenches. And I know they're a little bit finicky to kind of get started, but from what I kind of know about asparagus, if you have an established crop of it, you know, it should do pretty well once established. But I think, you know, having weeds and stuff kind of growing in there almost outcompetes that asparagus sometimes, especially if it's like quack grass and all that really weedy crabgrass and whatnot. It can be pretty aggressive. So
you could put I guess in the spring before the asparagus comes emerges, if you've got grasses emerging ahead of the asparagus, I mean, you could use some chemicals at that point.
Yeah.
Contact chemical.
Yeah. I would just be, you know, careful, because if your asparagus coming up and you spray that on accident, wanna... that's not good for anyone.
No, for
no,
sure.
No.
So... Okay. There you go, Bob. You've got an interesting situation. Maybe somebody else has had something like that and can comment for us. You never know. Stay listening, because you might be hearing from some other folks who have had the same situation. Appreciate your call very much. Thank you. Oh, man. Janet in Monticello, your turn. Hi.
Oh, good morning. I have a Lanistera sempervirens honeysuckle. And I wonder if I need to cut that down now or in the spring, cut it back. Are you there?
Yeah. Yep. I'm just thinking for a minute
Me
here.
Me too. I'm looking to see if that's one of our invasive species offenders here.
Oh, no, I hope not.
I think it is.
Yeah, that's I'm double checking before I say yes or no, because... let's see.
I think...
You said the sempervirens?
Yes.
Okay, that seems to be, like, that looks like it's more
that
the vine
okay?
form?
Yes.
Okay, then I think you'll be okay. It's not invasive, so you don't need to get it out of your yard. There is an invasive honeysuckle that grows out in the woods and can kind of get obnoxious, so we, at the garden, you know, cut it and paint it and get rid of it. So, but the one that you have seems to be that the vine form, so you should be okay. We have some of it at the garden in some spots, and... usually how I prune it is I'll actually wait until spring, because then you'll see what wood is actually dead versus alive. And you probably could cut it all back in winter. But, you know, if you want to have a nice big vine that's growing over a trellis or on a fence or something, you know, if you cut it back really hard in the winter, you know, you're going to have a small vine again in spring until it gets established. But at the garden, I usually wait until spring, because then you can see what's dead, because sometimes, you know, depending on the winter, you know, it might get a lot of die back, and then that way you can still have a good base for your vine to grow off of, and then still have a pretty big, you know, display of flowers in the spring. So
yeah.
I like to keep it on the, you know, I don't like to print it back in the fall, because my bird feeders are near it, and it's a good shelter.
Sure.
Yeah,
for the birds. But then I also have two Dictamnus albus. They're gas plants.
Yep.
And do I want to cut them back now this fall?
At the garden, we have quite a few of those in our King Shade Garden, and we go through and do our garden cut back. You know, we just started a couple weeks ago, and our gas plants, we take those back every fall with everything else and haven't had any problems with them.
Okay,
so,
and how far do I cut them back? Like 12 inches?
We usually cut everything back to about like 2 or 3 inches, actually,
depending on
how woody it is. If it's a really woody perennial or kind of shrub-like, we'll leave it up a little bit more, maybe like 5 or 6 inches. But, you know, a lot of your perennials can be cut back pretty close to the ground unless it has a really big crown that's kind of coming up. You want to kind of leave that alone, because if you cut through the crown, then you can essentially kill your plants. So
yeah.
All of our gas plants that we've had at the garden, I think we take down to about a couple inches, just because it's easier to rake through and get leaves out, you know, in the springtime.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Janet. And Julie in Cross Plains, it's your turn. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I have a question about pruning raspberries. I have the kind that produce in the early summer, and then they've been producing right up until when we got a hard frost last week. But in the second production, which it was just awesome this year, the vines were so heavy and drooping over that it was like going through a nasty thorny jungle to pick them. So I'm wondering if I should cut them back and when, or other ideas about how to maintain those, because they're probably 6-7 feet tall, and I have stakes in and I have them roped up to hold them up as much as possible, but still they're, you know, drooping way over and difficult to pick.
And they bore, so those are everbearing.
Yeah, that's what they're called.
Okay, well, raspberries, I don't grow them at home, but I know we have some at the garden. And I know with the everbearing types, they, like you said, they have a kind of a late crop that usually produces on like the first year canes. So those are like that first crop is usually more towards the top of the cane, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So then what you would do, you know, don't pinch them back right away, but allow those canes to flower and fruit, you know, for the fall like you did do. And then remove the stem tips that produced in the summer. Oh, wait. Nope. You wait until the cane has borne its fruit in the fall. After the cane, you know, produced on the top and then at the bottom, that cane is going to be done for the year and it's not, won't produce again. So then after it's done, you prune it, back to the ground.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
So the ones that I picked from this fall will not produce next year.
Correct.
So I prune those to the ground, and then the ones that are growing that didn't produce this year, those will produce next year.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. I'm
so
sorry if I was confusing.
Those?
Yes, because I know there's a everbearing, and then there's, you know, the early and the late season ones. So you typically cut back your canes after they produce, and then, you know, your raspberries are producing these fruit-bearing canes, but it's also sending up these other canes that aren't producing any fruit, and those are the ones that are going to produce next year.
So do I want to prune those back so they're not so difficult to handle, or should I just put in much taller stakes?
I would probably put in taller stakes because those ones that are coming in now, like those tips of those, if you cut those off, that's going to be your summer crop of berries that are going to be gone.
That's
so,
what I was thinking.
Yeah, so I would maybe invest in some taller stakes and maybe some sort of wire rigging to grow them up. I know I've seen in a couple of spots, almost kind of like the grapevines where they have these big trellis systems with these wires that they kind of train their vines on so they don't flop over like yours have been, especially if you have a really heavy crop.
Perfect.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Julie. Appreciate it. Let's go to Michelle in Arcadia next. Hi, Michelle.
Hello. I'm calling in regard to the gentleman with the grass in his asparagus bed. I have a very old asparagus bed. It's probably 4 feet by 6 feet. And in the spring, after the asparagus is up and the grass starts coming, I salt the bed. I take like barn salt and thoroughly cover the area. I mean, you want to see the salt on the ground, and then water it and water it and water it. Asparagus is a sea plant, so the salt will not kill it, but it's a pretty nice job on the grass. And I've been doing this for years, and it's quite effective.
Oh. Well, that's a new one on me. You've been doing it for years, Michelle, and it's worked.
Yes, I got the tip, actually, from a friend who's a landscape architect.
Well, there you go. I'm not sure what the UW Extension horticulturist would recommend, if they would recommend that, Lindsay, but...
Yeah, I have not heard of that before. I know at the garden, all the salt that we put on our sidewalks tends to kind of... you know, hinder some of the growth of some of our perennials and grass along the edges. But I know if it's a plant that can tolerate salt, I mean, maybe don't try it on your whole bed, but maybe just one little ear to see if it works for you. I mean, you know, what works for some person might not work for another, but, you know, you don't know unless you try.
Yeah, so give it a try. Thanks, Michelle. Appreciate
Thank
the call.
You.
Mike in Madison, we're on to you now. Hi, Mike.
Hey. I thought I was going to go to the extension office, but... this is my question. I have planted two blueberry bushes, and they're real small and fragile looking. They're top of a hill, and I just wonder what I should do this fall. Should I cover them? Should I fertilize them? Should I mulch them? And what's the best approach?
How long have you had your blueberry plants?
I put them in late July, I think it was.
Okay.
So they're first-year plants.
Yeah.
Okay. I know blueberries like it to be a little bit more acidic.
Yeah.
So if you look for fertilizers that have, like, ammonium sulfate in them. Those tend to be the best bet because they like that acidic soil. I know some people have used pine needles to mulch their blueberries. And I know at the Botanical Garden, we don't have any blueberry plants that we maintain, but our master gardeners for a couple of years had some blueberries of different cultivars and varieties growing. And what they would do to help overwinter them is they would put a chicken wire ring around the plant, and then they would put hay and straw in there to kind of mulch it and create a nice little buffer to help overwinter your blueberry plants. And that seems to work pretty effective for them. So... I also know people that don't mulch their blueberries, so I guess since it's the first year, if they're kind of small and not too happy looking, it probably wouldn't be a bad idea to give them a little mulch and a little extra protection, but definitely if you're looking in a fertilizer, you know, do something that is more acidic and aim towards blueberry plants.
I wouldn't want to cover them completely, though, would I?
At the garden, what they did is their plants were maybe like 2 feet tall, and I think the cage rings were about like 2 or 3 feet tall, and they put the mulch all the way up to the top of the plant.
I see.
So if you're as long as you're using like a straw or a hay, you know, it's kind of light, you're still going to get airflow through there, so it's not going to compact or kill your plant. It's just basically kind of helping to hold some of the heat in there and protect from the cold winds that are going to come through. But you want to make sure if you do that you get it off really early in the spring before, you know, your plant starts growing, because otherwise you can invite different diseases in there if you have, like, kind of mushy, wet straw, and then, you know, you can kind of start your year off on a bad foot, you know, with different diseases that might come up. So
there you go.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call. And Kate in Menasha, it's your turn. Hi, Kate.
Hey, hi there. Thanks so much for this great program and for taking my call.
Sure.
I listen every week. I have too many questions. I bought some Crocosmia lucifer bulbs at the Chicago garden show last winter, planted them in the late spring. I think I planted them wrong, so they had to work hard to come out of the ground, but they did. And... So I took them out of the ground. I live in the Fox Valley. I took them out of the ground when I took my dahlias out just last week. And never having planted these before, I'm not sure what to do with them. They look like, it looks like the original root or bulb or corm has got new little bulbs growing on it, which seems good, but I don't know whether I should take those off and plant those separately in the spring, or so I'm asking for information about that plant, I guess.
Okay.
Well, we actually have some of those at the Botanical Garden that we planted a couple years ago, and there's, I think, only two plants left, but we left them in the ground, and they actually came back for a couple years. So in Green Bay and kind of the Fox Valley, the Crocosmia is a zone 5 to 9 plant, so it can be marginally hardy depending on our winters. Mm-hmm. I haven't tried overwintering them out of the ground before, but I have tried other sort of gladiolas that are kind of the same structure. And like you said, you had your main bulb and all those little babies on there called the daughter bulbs. That meant that plant was really happy growing in the spring, and it's producing little babies to, you know, kind of create more energy for the blooms next year. So I don't know if you were listening earlier, I mentioned the cat litter pail with a lid and some sphagnum moss. I know those Crocosmia, those ones, in my experience, tend to be a little more finicky overwintering. So I like to put them in that bucket with a little bit of damp sphagnum moss, because that kind of keeps the humidity a little bit higher in there, and that humidity prevents the bulbs from drying out and desiccating. And if that happens, you know, they've got no energy left to produce anything for next year, so they just dry up and you can't really use them. So,
and where do you keep them, the pails?
Oh, yep, sorry, that's in our shop. We have an unheated, well, it's heated, but never gets below freezing, about like 40, 50 degrees in the winter. Just kind of, if you have a heated garage, you know, you can store them out there, or even in the basement in like a cool, dark corner will work. And then in about March or April, you can bring those back out and then put them in little pots and get them started a little sooner. Or if you want to wait until, you know, the danger of frost has passed, you can plant them back outside. So that would probably be my best bet, something like that. I haven't tried overwintering them like any other ways. You could also try putting them in brown paper bags with a little bit of damp peat moss. That's how I store dahlias sometimes, and that seems to be pretty effective. So maybe try some of each just to kind of see what works for you. And, you know, given your conditions of your house or your garage, you know, might be a little more or less humid or cooler, warmer than what I've been using as my method. So I would just maybe try both of those and see what works for you, and whatever works best, you know, do that again next year.
That sounds great. I think I'll try that. Can I ask one other question?
Sure.
It's related. I'm also new to dahlias, and those, gosh, they just did great in my yard. And when I dug them up, I was shocked how many.
Yes.
I mean, you know, it was crazy.
Very prolific sometimes.
Yeah. So one of the original tubers, you know, I guess I planted it in one of my more clay-y beds. And so when I took the tubers out, there was a fair amount of clay wedged in between these, you know, proliferating new tubers. And it was wet, and I could not get all of that out without damaging the plant. So I just got everything off that I could, put it in this actually really cool metal mesh tin that, or box that I have, and it's down in my basement in a dark corner. Is it critical that I get all of that dirt off of those tubers, or will they be okay if 90% is off?
I think they will be just fine, because when I started taking care of the dahlias in the cottage garden, like the first couple years, I was very meticulous about getting every single piece of dirt off, all the debris and everything before storing them.
Yeah.
And then there was one year where we just ran out of time and I didn't get to wash them. So they sat in crates for a couple weeks and kind of dried out. They still had soil on them. And I threw them into brown paper bags with a little bit of peat moss, and they overwintered just fine. So some people, you know, you can get diseases and rot, you know, if you don't clean off your soil. But unless you have like a rampant disease going through your garden that's been taking down a lot of plants, I think you'll probably be okay. I wouldn't stress out about it for any means. So, like I said, when I pull mine out of the ground, I usually, you know, leave the soil on. If anything falls off, that's fine. But then I kind of let them dry out for a couple days or a week, you know, in your garage or in a sheltered area, so if it rains, they don't get wet, because that drying out will get rid of a lot of those, you know, bacteria and fungi that would generally grow in those moist, wet conditions. So if you let them dry out, a lot of those pathogens will kind of, you know, drop down. And then when you store them for the winter, you're less likely to get rot. But in the spring, before you plant them up again, just go through all your tubers and make sure you cut out any pieces that are rotted or dried up really bad. And, you know, I usually check them a couple times throughout the winter just to make sure that you don't have any rot issues going through everything. And I tend to not store everything all in one bag. I usually use your brown grocery bags and just, you know, put two or three bunches in there and then roll it up and then, you know, put your other ones in other bags, because that way if one bag has an infected tube, you're not going to destroy your whole crop. You know, just
yeah,
that one bag
good idea.
To throw out.
Good idea. Kate, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking today with Lindsay Hendricks, Assistant Director of Horticulture at the Green Bay Botanical Garden. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller with my guest Lindsay Hendricks, Assistant Director of Horticulture at the Green Bay Botanical Gardens. Questions? Give a call, 800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. Crystal on Facebook has a question about pampas grass. She received some roots with some wispy-looking grass and doesn't know what to do with them. I would think she could put them in the ground yet, couldn't she?
Yeah, as long as your ground's not frozen, you know, you're more than welcome to plant anything. Just, you know, give it a good water before you put it to sleep for the winter. I know pampas grass, we do have some at the gardens, and you know, depending on the year, it doesn't always flower because it is a warmer season grass. So I would, you know, maybe mulch it a little bit before, you know, putting it to bed for the winter, just to kind of help it overwinter and give it a little bit of a kickstart before spring starts.
And Amy on Facebook wonders if she should cut back her clematis or clematis.
Well, it depends on which flowering group of clematis you have, because there are some clematis that bloom on old wood and there's some clematis that bloom on new wood. So it's important to kind of know which clematis you have before pruning it. So at the garden, we have a lot of clematis, and especially in the cottage garden. So I usually wait until spring to do my pruning, and I usually just cut off what is dead and not budding out, because then that way I know I'm not going to be cutting off any flower buds, and I honestly don't even know which all ones are and aren't, you know, pruning groups. So I just wait until spring when I know which ones, you know, are dead or have the dead growth.
Sure.
But if there's any of them that, you know, are very, very prolific and get kind of out of control, I have a couple of those at the garden too. You know, Radar Love is one that just goes bonkers. I always cut that one back in fall just because I can keep it under control a little bit easier for the next year. So I would wait until spring and just cut out your dead stuff and go from there.
Dawn in Madison has a question. Hi, Dawn.
Hi there. I have two orchids that are inside, and both of them flowered beautifully over the summer. And now I'm having these really long sprouts that are growing. Now, are those, if I, you know, keep them, are they going to, will they sprout in the summer again or flower again in the summer? Or is this something that as they stop growing, I should just trim back?
Do you know what type of orchids they are? Are they the Phalaenopsis or the moth orchids?
I think it's the first one.
The Phalaenopsis? Okay.
Yeah.
Are the sprouts coming up from between the leaves and growing upwards, or are they coming down kind of where all the roots are and growing more horizontally?
Some of them are growing straight up, and some of them are growing horizontally.
Okay. So I don't know if I'd call myself an orchid expert, but I have a lot of them at home and they seem to do okay. So I just kind of let them do what they're doing and they seem to be pretty happy. So the thing with orchids that some people, you know, don't know is they bloom, and their blooms usually last a few weeks or months depending on how happy they are. And then once they're done blooming, they drop all their petals and flowers, and then you have this ugly little stalk that's sticking up and people think they're dead. As long as your leaves are nice and green and healthy and smooth and shiny, they're completely okay. They're just kind of going into a dormancy period. So what they're doing is they're resting and producing and saving energy so they can start growing again, producing more roots, more leaves, or more flower stalks. So have no fear if they're kind of resting for a little bit. Mine usually kind of have cycles where they'll bloom and then they'll go dormant for a couple months and then they send up new flower stalks.
Okay.
So your sprouts that are growing upwards are likely new flower stalks, and they'll start out really slow. So, you know, just kind of keep doing your watering and fertilizing, whatever routine that you're doing. Don't put them in a different sun location, because sometimes a drastic change in environment will kind of shock them and they'll abort the sprouts and flower buds that they might be forming.
Okay.
Any of sprouts that are coming out horizontally around the surface of your orchid bark, they tend to have kind of like a whitish coating look to them.
Yeah.
When they're new. Those are just the roots, and if they're growing on top of the orchid bark, that's perfectly all fine. They're epiphytic plants, so they get a lot of their moisture from, you know, the soil, or I mean the moisture that's in the bark and in the air. So as long as, you know, everything's green and happy and healthy looking, you know, you've got a happy orchid, just keep on keeping on what you're doing. And you just have to be patient. You know, some plants, if they're really happy, they'll keep flowering for you multiple times a year. Other ones that are maybe a little more finicky or don't like your house conditions as much as a greenhouse, you know, they might take a little bit longer in between bloom cycles.
Okay. And what do I do? Like, the horizontal ones are really starting to stick out.
Okay.
Like, far away from the pot. So what do I do with those? Do I just let them go, or...
Yep, I would definitely
let them go.
You don't want to prune them back because, like I said, you know, they get all their moisture from the air and the moisture in that orchid bark, if you're cutting them off, you're basically cutting off, you know, a source of moisture from the plant. So as long as they're nice and healthy and green, just let them go. If they tend to start outgrowing your pot, you know, you might need to repot your orchid. In that case, I would just look online how to repot, or if you have any greenhouses near you that might be offering classes on repotting orchids, you know, it's pretty easy, but easier to kind of see a demonstration versus like trying to tell someone how to do it. So if your roots start turning like brown and black and, you know, getting all mushy, those ones you can cut off because those are starting to rot, usually from overwatering. But as long as they're green and lush looking, you know, just let them keep on keeping on.
So I've been watering. I've been using a quarter of a cup once a week. Is that correct?
If that's what's working for you, I would not change a thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some people do the ice cube trick. I water mine usually once a week. I just soak them good in the kitchen sink and let them sit for a couple hours. But if you got a system that's working for you, I would just keep doing the same thing.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, one of them I've already had to repot twice. So.
Well, then you're doing something right.
Boy, getting the right amount of sun there for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much for all your help.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And just on an email, Joanne wonders if it's too late to, well, she's wondering about if it's too late to put down weed and feed fertilizer on her lawn. And we've already kind of talked about that. And the recommendations from the UW are that you should not be putting down weed and feed at this time of the year. That is indeed too late, and they recommend that sort of Labor Day one is the last time you would do that. So that's what we're hearing from the UW. Lindsay Hendricks, our guest today. She is the Assistant Director of Horticulture at the Green Bay Botanical Garden. Always fun talking with her on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Lindsay Hendricks, Assistant Director of Horticulture at the Green Bay Botanical Gardens. Always great to have her along, and thank you so much for listening in. If you have a question for Lindsay, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Lindsay, Andrew on Facebook wonders if it's too late to plant bulbs. He's planting in a raised bed, and my answer would be no.
No.
It's not too late.
We actually just finished up the last of our 65,200 bulbs Tuesday. So, like I said, you know, as long as the ground's not frozen and it's easy digging, I'd say go for it. I know at the garden, when we do our bulbs, you know, get them in the ground, we water them in to make sure you get all the air pockets out of the soil, and that helps kind of set the bulb up to start producing roots, because a lot of those bulbs, actually in the fall, you don't notice a lot of top growth because they're really not actively growing, but they are setting out roots that will help them get a kick start to next spring. So plant them, water them. We usually use Milorganite as kind of like a fertilizer for them in the spring, and it adds, you know, a little bit of critter protection, especially if you're doing tulips, and then you're pretty much good to go until next spring.
Yeah, I was I've been walking by along the street here at the UW Madison, and seeing the bulbs being kind of set in on top of the different colored bulbs as they're making, you know, some sort of design. And, you know, they get them all set up and in the design they want, and then they cover them.
Yeah, we have a couple, well, there's a couple different ways you can do it. At the garden, we lay them out. We don't do any patterns necessarily. We buy our blends of bulbs, usually from Color Blends or Brent and Becky's, where, you know, you get your pinks and purples and yellows all mixed together. And so when we open up our bags, you know, we can't tell which bulb is which color. So we just, you know, space them all equally and let them go. But this year we had one of our summer helpers kind of, you know, was into math and stuff. And he's like, well, we should really try doing some designs ones next year, you know, to make it a little bit more interesting. So we might do that next year. You know, it'll be a little bit more work, but it'll be probably pretty interesting to do. So,
oh, sure.
Yeah, and then there's other people that don't measure them out. They just kind of toss them in their bed and plant them where they are for a little bit more natural look. But you can also, we've read a couple articles where you just set them out on top of your soil, and then you can put mulch on top, and they'll come up the next year. Some people like to plant them in the ground, especially like your tulips are really good for the critters. The chipmunks love them. So, you know, getting those a little deeper into the soil kind of helps prevent them from digging mm-hmm. them off and running across the lawn with them.
The UW-Madison, in the spring when the bulbs come up, it's always really pretty, and they always have some fun designs. It's fun to watch. Darren in Green Bay has a question. Hi, Darren.
Yeah, hi. So I bought a Meyer lemon tree last summer, and it, you know, bloomed. It had lots of blooms, and then it produced quite a few fruits, left it outside. Squirrels decided to eat the lemons. They didn't like them. So over winter, then, it didn't really fare that well, and we don't have any real good sources of light. But then in the spring, it really didn't do much either, so I repotted it, and it put on a ton of vegetative growth, but it really never flowered this year. And so I was curious if maybe I should move it to a friend's house or something for more light in the winter, or what my options might be.
So in the summer, you have it outside, you said, right?
This summer, I actually kept it in a sunroom, which actually worked really well because then the squirrels couldn't, you know,
get to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think probably the reason that you didn't get any fruit this year was probably had to do with the winter. It being inside, a lot of plants that we grow outside in the summer and we bring inside for the winter, they kind of get like a shock almost because they're going from this warm, sunny, humid environment to like a cool, dry, not so sunny house. And for a lot of plants, especially like those lemon trees, like full sun, really bright, warm temperatures, you know, that's kind of a shock to their system. So they almost go into like a dormancy period where they might drop a lot of their leaves. You know, they're not really putting a lot of production in a fruit because they're just kind of struggling to survive. So you can try, you know, giving it a little bit of a fertilizer might kind of help. But, you know, if you're having problems with it not producing fruit, my first suggestion would probably be getting it into an area that gets more bright lights and maybe a little bit warmer temperatures, because then when it comes inside for the winter, it's kind of, you know, nice and happy. And then next spring when it, or next summer when it goes outside, you know, it's kind of in that state where it's going to be ready to produce, you know, flowers and fruit again. So
for my lime tree, for limey, when I bring limey in, limey's in a south-facing window, which is great. And then I have a pole lamp, and that pole lamp is just the right height. And I have some grow light bulbs, the new kind in the pole lamp, in two of the three, and I shine those right on within about 6 inches of the lime tree, and that seems to help.
Yeah, supplemental lighting, be it, you know, a south-facing window or, you know, extra grow lamps will definitely, you know, help the situation as well. The more light, the better, especially in the summer when, you know, days are shorter and temperatures are cooler.
But limey flowers and produces in the wintertime, so.
Oh, well, perfect. Yeah, I might try that, and I might also try, you know, maybe Lemmy is the new name. Fine.
All right, there you go. Thanks, Darren. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, boy. Charlie in Beaver Dam, it's your turn. Hi, Charlie.
Hi. So, rhubarb, do you let it go up to seed and then cut it off right away, or can I just leave it up and then cut it off like now after the first frost, or what do you recommend?
Are you talking about the flower stalk when it flowers?
Yes.
At the garden, and from all my fellow rhubarb growers, they tend to not let the flower stalk go to seed or even really flower for that matter, because Some people say it creates the rhubarb to get bitter, but when a lot of plants flower and go to seed, all that energy that would be going into leaf production, you know, that's what we use for making rhubarb tort, you know, are those petioles on those leaves. If all that energy is going into the flower and the seed, you know, they're going to get less leaf production and you're going to get less production out of your rhubarb plants. And I also heard that it, you know, makes the stems get kind of bitter. So at the garden, we usually cut the flower off before it even gets to that point, and then, you know, keep harvesting the rhubarb as long as it's still, you know, tasting nice and sweet. And then in the fall or late summer when it kind of slows down, we basically just kind of let them do their thing. We start harvesting because then the leaves that are left on the plant can kind of produce more food, you know, to send down in the roots to help it overwinter for the winter. So definitely deadhead it and then just kind of let it go and fall, and then in the spring clean up any dead dry leaves, and then it will start its life cycle all over again.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Charlie. Marion in Sullivan up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm traveling, so I hope I don't break up. My husband planted some roses, and they did just beautifully, but they've gotten real leggy. Should I cut them down now or wait until spring?
I would definitely wait with roses to cut them back until spring once they start growing again, because they get kind of leggy. You know, this summer, at least in Green Bay, we had a very wet, cool spring and a slow start to summer. So a lot of our roses ended up getting black spot and some other diseases and dropped a lot of their leaves. And some of them did get quite leggy, didn't bloom as well. But you definitely don't want to prune anything now, because what you're doing when you make those cuts on that plant is you're opening up those tissues inside to the cold. And a lot of roses, especially if they're not like a hardy landscape rose, you know, that cold gets down into their stems and in their crowns, and then they're less likely to overwinter as well. So we do all of our pruning at the gardens in spring after they start kind of budding out a little bit, because then you'll be able to see what is live and what's dead. And if you want to take your rose back a little bit, you know, if it's getting too tall and leggy, that's the time to do it. And the other thing, if you do it in fall, we've had a couple years, you know, where you get a really warm spell in November and, you know, the plant's not dormant yet because the ground isn't frozen. Well, then those roses think, oh, I can start growing again. And then they start pushing out this new growth. Well, then you get that cold snap and the ground freezes, you know, those roses aren't really hardened off per se. And then they have, you know, a less likely chance to overwinter as well. So definitely wait until spring once the buds start popping out, and then you can go ahead and prune away.
Like having a premature baby.
Yeah. You're breaking up, Mary, and we're losing you, but thank you so much for your call. I want to give Tim in Green Bay a chance to join us. Tim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to state that it's... Hi.
Are you there? Oh.
Yeah, I just wanted to state that it's important when you're mulching plants to wait till the ground freezes so that critters don't move in and have a home there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Best to wait on that mulch until the ground is already frozen, isn't it, Lindsay?
Yes, when we do our roses, that's really the only thing at the gardens that we mulch, just because a lot of the plants that we put in the ground, you know, are hardy to our zone, so we don't need a lot of extra protection. But when we do mulch the roses, we usually wait until after Thanksgiving, you know, when the ground has frozen somewhat, like you said, for the critter protection, or keeping critters out, and also so the roses don't start growing again. I would definitely wait. That's probably a really good idea.
And Jan in Appleton says, you mentioned that you use paint to kill invasive species in the garden. What's in that paint? I think that we probably need to explain that.
Yes, I guess I just assumed everyone knows how we do our invasive species control at the botanical garden. So it's not actually a paint. What we use is a 50-50 mix, or one part kills all to one part water. And what we do when we do our invasive species is we use a saw or a lopper to cut off the invasive species, be it buckthorn or honeysuckle, and that little stem that's sticking out of the ground, we use a paintbrush and we take that mixture and then we just paint it on the stem, the cut stem. And the best time to actually do invasive species control like that is in fall, because all the trees and shrubs, you know, they're translocating all the nutrients down that are in their leaves. So, you know, everything is getting sucked down into the roots. So if you put that herbicide on that cut stem, you know, that plant is going to take that all down into the roots, and then it's going to kill it off. So we use kills all and water, mix it 1-to-1 ratio, and then that's painted on the cut stems. And we usually put a little bit of dye in there too, just so we know when we're going through the woods doing control, you know, what stems have already been painted and which ones haven't.
Steve in Fitchburg, it's your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks. I've got a smoke bush that I put in the front yard, and it, next to some will be its dwarf. It's like 15 feet tall, and I, you know, was trying to prune it to keep it from getting really kind of that tall. I wanted it denser. And now I got real leggy, you know, shoots on top and then more foliage up high. So, but there's a bare spot in the middle. How should I be pruning that?
That's a typical smoke bush conundrum. We've got quite a few of them at the garden in various spots, and I've basically seen every type of growth habit that you've explained. So I guess if you're looking to get that nice full form, what we do when our smoke bushes tend to get like that really thick stem and then they kind of bloom really high up, there's not a lot of foliage in the middle, and they get those little leggy whips and suckers that come out the bottom, is what we'll do is we'll just cut the whole thing to the ground in the winter, and then the next spring it'll start regrowing. And the first year it'll probably look more like a shrubby ground cover than an actual tree, but that's just, you know, it's producing all of its new stem and its new woods. And if you have too many of those little suckers coming up, you can just kind of thin them out a little bit. And then the next year when it grows, you'll have a little bit more of that woody growth, and it should start bushing out and looking more like a smoke tree or smoke bush, and even start flowering a little bit. And then, you know, by the third year, it might kind of start getting back to that leggy, you know, leaves on top, nothing in the middle sort of a look. So you can just, you know, cut back the older wood that's in there or start over. I guess it's kind of, you know, the preference of what you want it to look like. But we have at the garden, you know, the really stuff that gets really big and woody and doesn't get much leaves on the bottom, you know, we do take those stems back, and they seem to come back okay. I know the purple varieties tend to be a little bit more prolific than the yellow and chartreuse varieties. So I guess, you know, I would just cut back your bigger stuff, or you can cut the whole thing down and just let it rejuvenate for next year.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate the call. Still time for you at 800-642-1234. You guys have some water features, ponds, and other kinds of things. What do you do for those to get them ready for winter?
Oh, fun. Water features. They're so fun. We've got a lot of them in the gardens. I don't take care of shutting everything down for the winter, but we do have our pond that has all the koi fish in. So this year we're actually overwintering them in the koi pond. So Sarah, our horticulturist that maintains that area, she takes the fish out and power washes everything and then refills it with water and puts the fish back in, and we leave the pump going so they have air circulation. We have our big fountain that's in the main part of the garden gets drained and shut down, and we actually have one of our WPS Garden of Lights features is an actual fountain replica that goes on top of it. So that's kind of cool for winter interest. But we have a lot of fountains and little streams throughout the gardens that are run by pumps. So basically we shut off the water, you know, drain the pump out of the wells, and then the pumps get pulled out of the actual feature, and then we bring them back to our shop and store them in a tub of water so they don't dry out over the winter. And then that prevents, you know, all those lines and irrigation that's going through those areas from freezing and cracking and then having to repair it the next year. So I think we have everything shut down right now. So it's, you know, a tedious process and a lot of algae and muck and stuff that we deal with, but you know, it's okay because we get it cleaned up now, and then next spring turn everything on and you're all set to go.
Yeah, there you go. You mentioned the light features. When will people be able to see those light features?
Well, if they come into the gardens now, they'll see a lot of it. It won't be lit up, unfortunately, but the light show actually starts November 24th. That's our first night from 5 to 9, and then it runs through December 30th. Each night is 5 to 9 p.m. We're open Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, and there's some select other days. But if you go on our website, gbbg.org, we have our schedule on there as well as information on tickets and FAQs and all that. So yeah, it's pretty fun. It's going to be starting pretty soon. Like I said, we're about probably 75-80% set up right now, so it's still a work in progress. But I know it's a really great event. You have to come check it out. I know, be here before we know it.
That's for sure. Cindy in Dane County has a question for you. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling about a 19-year-old hibiscus that's on at least its third life. And now the branches are stretched really long. It does sun here because we live in the woods, but I do set it out on the deck in the summer.
But now it's really leggy.
Right. And would you cut those back or not? I don't want to lose the plant, and yet it's its third life. I cut it way back when it was one really long branch and quite ugly, and I decided, well, goodbye. But then it came back again. But what it has, they're very long. Would you trim them?
Yeah.
And when would you do that?
Okay, well, first of all, I want to say congratulations for keeping a hibiscus alive that long. That's awesome. My mom used to overwinter them in the basement, and they'd kind of go dormant, and I know she didn't take any of them for 19 years, but I would definitely say it's probably getting leggy because it's not getting, or it's getting insufficient light. Like you said, if you live in the woods and you don't have a lot of bright sunlight, it's going to kind of stretch out just out of necessity of trying to maintain as much light as possible, but you can definitely prune it. And what the pruning is going to do when you cut it back to a bud is it's going to stimulate those buds below the cut to start growing. And so instead of having one long leggy branch, you make that cut, you might have two or three more branches come out of that cut. So by pruning it back, it will help it bush out in essence. But, you know, if you're not getting a lot of really bright light, it might kind of get leggy again. So you might have to keep pruning back a couple times, you know, not a year necessarily, but every so many years. But definitely the time to prune that would probably be in spring, because especially if you take it inside for the winter, you know, you don't want to stimulate any more growth because it's kind of adjusting to indoor temperatures, less light, you know, drier air, little less humidity. So you don't want to shock it, you know, when you bring it in. So I would just kind of get it through the winter, you know, give it as much light as you can. If you have any supplemental lighting like grow lamps, or make sure it's in a south-facing window, you know, it'll keep it happy. And then next spring, usually about March or April is when we start stuff up at the garden again. You know, we can bring it in more light and maybe give it a prune, but I'd probably wait until you put it outside for the summer, because then it'll kind of get some time to transition into its new summer environment and start getting happy, and then, you know, cut it back, and then it should probably start pushing out for you. And definitely give it some fertilizer. I know they like a little bit more acidic. I know Miracle-Gro makes that Muracid that my mom uses and swears by for all of her hibiscuses that she grows. So,
great. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Wow, we've covered a lot today, Lindsay. Any last word of wisdom for our gardeners today?
Yeah, well, thanks for all the questions. It's been really fun today. I would say, you know, getting your garden ready for fall is a big undertaking, but, you know, it's definitely worth it, because then spring you can hit the ground running and you're ready for everything coming up. You know, there's still a lot of fall interest out there, so you want to come to the Green Bay Botanical Gardens and check things out. You know, we still got lots of stuff to see. You know, our Garden of Lights is starting, you know, pretty soon, but, you know, just get all your stuff done for fall so you can, like, hunker down in the winter and just enjoy it, and then next spring you're all set to go.
Well, that sounds wonderful, Lindsay. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks. Great being back. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll get you back again. Lindsay Hendricks, our guest today. She is the Assistant Director of Horticulture. She works out of the Green Bay Botanical Garden. And I hope you have a chance to visit the garden sometime. If you're in the Green Bay area, it's really worth stopping by and taking a look. And if you're in the Green Bay area and you haven't been there, shame on you. You should stop by and see it. It's always a fun place. Well, I tell you what, Scott Royce of UW Extension Horticulturist joins us next week for Garden Talk. Jesse LeGrew talks computers and software on Monday. Stay with us. Lots in store.